Wastelanders, and video game players. I am your host, Doc Von Derwin, and this is Podcast Lost in Games. No intro music this week, just because I am down to the wire and I am super lazy. This is a fun episode. I recorded it with my buddy Alex Pan. I have another episode coming up with Grant Oney, good friend of mine. I had to push the Grant Oney episode just because with this episode, we talk a lot about The Division. We talk a lot about betas and pre-release content. And I just bought The Division, haven't played it yet, but I make a lot of predictions and potentially accusations, you might call them, about The Division. Just first-hand ideas and everything. I wanted to release this episode just because by next episode, by the episode after, I will have an opinion on The Division, and I'll be able to talk about it a bit more, maybe even give a review. Unfortunately, at the end of this episode, my mic cut out, and Alex and I had a bit of steam going about pre-orders. I don't know why I paused there. But we had a conversation going about pre-orders, and I was talking about the benefits of pre-orders and how, from a certain perspective, it is when you go to GameStop, you are able to place your money on all these games that are coming out, most likely by the end of the year, if they announce a Batman and a Halo and a Call of Duty, and you want to get all these games, but you don't want to drop $150, especially because if you're between the ages of, you know, 12 and 20, you probably don't have $150 that you can just drop on the spot. It's so pre-orders was a neat invention that allowed people to pay over time over the course of a year, specifically over at a GameStop. This is how I was able to afford Aliens vs. Predator plus Bioshock 2 plus Red Dead Redemption, because they all came out within the span of a month when I was, you know, of a younger teenage age. And I thought, well, pre-orders were designed to be a beneficial thing. But then I started thinking about it, is the possibility of how pre-orders were not designed to be a special help you kind of mechanism. I found out that games, they actually kind of go down to the wire before they are perfected and set and ready to go. They will do as much as they can within the window to make everything work. And whatever doesn't work by the time it's released, they'll most likely just cut and just say that's a feature that we will either not do or add in later over the course of patches and online extra stuff. So the pre-order system could have also been designed to give game companies an idea of how many people are most likely going to purchase this based on their marketing, just based on demos and images and info that they released about their game before it has come out, to get people interested in putting money down and guaranteeing a purchase on their game. But that means if they have a set number of people, they could also decide, oh, we can scale back the amount of work on these specific features or these specific things, especially because we know we're able to get this much money. And if we release patches over on, we might be able to get more people or that kind of aspect. It was just a thought I had on pre-orders that I thought was kind of interesting. And yeah, that was just something about pre-release content. Also, the concept of how you're able to get your money back from pre-orders. If, like, you go to GameStop, like, if you're pre-ordering something, that does guarantee that either you're getting a game or you're getting your money back. Because we kind of talk about how people get fish-hooked into putting their money into something that's not completely done, and then getting screwed over when the product is either not delivered or delivered very terribly and not what was promised. And I talk about how pre-orders is a promise that a game will be released at the very most. Whether or not it's a good game is, you know, up to the player. So, just wanted to do this little intro, talk about that, talk about how the mic, we're just gonna kind of cut out at the end. I'm super lazy, and I just want to get this episode out of there. Fun episode, I enjoyed doing these podcasts, but, you know, it's just busy weeks, man. It's just what happens. Alright, you guys enjoy the show, I'm gonna go sleep now. All right, take care, everybody. Bye.
Should be. Go ahead and speak for me.
What's up?
Can you hear me, Doc?
Yes, I can. It looks like we're I'm going to boost up these levels a little bit just to get better sound. There we go. All right.
Is there any... Do you want the computer? Because...
No. We're good. This is we've started now. This is the beginning of it.
Oh, okay.
What were you playing before I walked in?
Bloodborne.
Bloodborne.
For the PS4. Have you played it?
Oh, you have your PS4 plugged into this?
Yeah, my PS4.
Oh,
my
there
Wii.
It is. Under here.
Yeah, Wii head in here.
Damn. So. I have not. When it comes to all those very difficult games like Dark Souls and Bloodborne, lately, I've been playing games as, like, a wind-down, so I usually play them to, like, relieve stress. Like, me and my roommate, we were co-oping our way through all the Halo games because we had the Master Chief Collection.
Yeah.
So we were co-oping our way all through those games on just, like, normal difficulty, activating a couple skulls where you get, like, unlimited grenades and ammo, and it was just a good stress relief. It was a good kind of zone-out thing, so after, like, long days, it would be a way to just, you know... Take the edge off. And so something like that's as difficult as Bloodborne or Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Oh man, I would lose my mind. I'd be so stressed out during the day.
Isn't that the cool one where you can like switch between the old graphics and the new graphics?
Absolutely, yeah, because it's the updated versions of all of them. So it's the version for Xbox One. It's all games, and they gave out a special DLC where you can play like Halo 3 ODST.
Now,
so the only game that's not on Xbox One, as far as Halo goes, or 2, to be fair, is Halo Wars and Halo Reach.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
That's interesting.
Are you playing anything else at the moment?
I am a person who doesn't finish his games at all. So I've played up to like 40 games at once right now.
Oh, jeez.
And I have none of them are complete. On Steam, I own over 150 games, and I've completed, like, 10. And so my challenge has been, like, have 10 games, finish them, and then move on. And sadly, I've picked Fallout 4, which I haven't played
any
of
unending.
The Fallout. Yeah,
yeah, okay.
The Witcher, which
again,
has
unending.
No ending. So I've picked myself a horrible list.
That is brutal. Mainly because, The Witcher came out before Fallout 4. I never played The Witcher, but, like, all my friends do. All of them love it. I haven't heard a single bad thing about Witcher, especially because they won, like, all the Game of the Year awards last year and all that.
Yeah.
But Fallout 4, man, I lost myself big time to that game, and I put, like, 70 hours in that game in, like, 2 months. Which
Dang.
Is rare for me, because that's like, I'm focused on work and working out and doing all this and hanging out with friends and socializing. And so I just ended up just totally going back to like old high school days where it's like, oh yeah, I'm just going to go to work, work out, come home and play video games for several hours.
Yeah, it was, that's like 15 hours a week too.
Oh yeah, it was like, it was like a full-time job for me. I was playing that nonstop. Don't regret a single moment. I have a second character. I'm hopefully, once I finish up a couple of my other games, I'll eventually go back to it. And plus there's like new DLC coming out.
Yeah.
So it'd be good to tackle that DLC with my latest character that I have. So, But yeah, The Witcher and Fallout 4, that's brutal.
Yeah.
What games do you normally gravitate to? Is it those open world? Because Bloodborne's open world too, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's an open world RPG.
I tend to go towards MMOs, JRPGs, and if I'm winding down, smaller games like Transistor. I'm doing Ori and the Blind Forest, which is absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, that's what I played a bit of that game. It is very gorgeous.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But I'm just hoping to finish games, and sadly, my list is stacking up.
I'm doing a thing where it's like, it doesn't matter about difficulty, it doesn't matter, as far as, like, if you could choose the difficulty, it doesn't matter which choice of difficulty, as long as I'm able to get through the game.
Mm-hmm.
But my new thing is that I'm going to play a game, beat it, and when it's officially beaten and I've gotten my experience of that game, I'm done with it. I'm just not gonna, I don't need to
touch
play
it
again.
So
the one I'm going through right now is Uncharted.
Ooh.
And because I got the Nathan Drake collection, so Uncharted 1, 2, and 3.
Came with it.
Yeah,
for
exactly.
The PS4? Or the
PS4,
Xbox?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because that's remastered for the PS4. So I'm on Uncharted 2, and I'm almost done with it. I've got just like a couple chapters left. And then I'll be doing Uncharted 3 right after that. And then maybe hit Tomb Raider, the second Tomb Raider that came out back before Christmas last year.
Yeah.
And then maybe when I'm done with both of those, I'll go back to Fallout. So just because with Fallout, it's never ending. There's so much stuff that I want to do. Mm-hmm. I say that once I beat the game, I'm done with it, and I have a second character that I'm starting with that one. But, I mean, there's got to be few exceptions to the rule out of the fact that it's, like, that's in, like, my top five favorite games. Same with, like, mm-hmm. The Last of Us. It's, like, I want to try and watch my friends play my copy of The Last of Us and watch them go through it again just because it's just such a good game. I want mm-hmm. to experience that particular game. Like, anything in my top five, top ten, it's, like, I'll reoccur, like, go through those again.
Uh-huh.
But when it comes to games like Doom 3 or, what else did I get recently? Or, I didn't get that one recently, but what else was came to mind? Was things like Uncharted, where it's like, it's great to get that narrative. It's not my favorite game of all time, but it's a very fun experience.
Mm-hmm.
Just get that experience and be done.
I feel you.
Whereas, like, the experience of Fallout is constantly, like, since everything's just changing and it's always different and playing on different difficulties causes different events to happen, like,
interesting.
That's, as far as, like, the types of enemies that spawn. So the harder difficulty it is, the harder leveled characters you'll get,
mm-hmm.
as well as more legendary creatures will show up, which the more legendary creatures get you more legendary weapons and doing all this, so it has this giant, like, ripple effect that kind of changes your experience.
And then 70 hours the next
and then months. And also there's like a million different quests that I didn't complete, so it's like now I could take my other character, complete those quests that I haven't done, and just see how that goes.
So have you been just following the main quest line? Is that
no, I actually departed there. My first character was all exploration, and so I wanted to find other settlements and see, like, what kind of goodies I can find and doing all that. And then come across all these, like, locked caravans or caves with, like, really cool stuff in it. And I just explored a lot. So this character is going to be way more mission-focused, as well as they have a settlement building, if you've gotten that far in the game.
I have.
Yeah, and so I'm focusing on building up settlements because I did none of that in my last character. I was like, this character's all about just exploring and doing all this. This one's going to be more of build a base, get all the money I can, buy everything that I want, and sell all the trash I don't use.
That's really good. Is this your first Fallout game, by the way?
No. Okay. I played Fallout 3 and a bit of New Vegas. I couldn't. There's something different about New Vegas. I just couldn't get into it.
Okay.
So, but I played tons of Fallout 3. Fallout 3 was my first one.
For someone who's like, this is their first Fallout game, it is so overwhelming to, like, walk into it. And you follow the quest for a little bit and then, you know, build a settlement and you get off track with that.
Yeah.
And then you're introduced with weapon modding and all these different things mm-hmm. and you're not sure where to go. And so as a new Fallout 4 player, it was, and it still is, extremely difficult to kind of learn the game. It's not... It doesn't have a hard learning curve, but there's a lot of material to go through, and
that's interesting that you say it's overwhelming, because what I thought was neat is that literally any of these new things that they have as far as gun modifications and settlement building and all that,
mm-hmm.
none of it's mandatory. Like, you need to keep up with this in order to be good at the game. It's like, I know friends who did no gun modding, and mm-hmm. all they did is whenever they found a gun that had a piece that they wanted...
Mm-hmm.
They would remove that piece and add it to the gun they had. So they would be able to get all the new attachments without having to, like, build out and get all the scrap metal and do whatever. And when it came to settlement building, I didn't complete the actual, like, original settlement quest, the sanctuary quest, where you learn all the essentials of building a settlement. I didn't complete that until, like, 25, 30 hours into my first game. Just because I was like, I'm not in this game to build settlements. I'm in to wear power armor, wield a minigun, and dispense my version of Wasteland Justice.
The game is amazing, and I think I recommend it to people who haven't played Fallout before. Definitely. I know a lot of people have a hard time going back to old games just because the graphics are kind of lower quality, so they have a hard time getting into it. And Fallout 4 just has so much to do, and you can do it in so many ways. I'm barely level 10 and I've sunk in 100 hours into it, and
you're barely level 10 and you're 100 hours in?
Yeah, I built my settlement once.
Yeah.
And then I destroyed it because I was unhappy with it, and I built it again. So I've done the settlement part different times trying to build it the way I wanted to, and I've never satisfied with it.
You're obsessed. That's exactly. So insane.
And I'm a perfectionist when it comes to games. So, okay. like, I have to learn every single thing. And so redoing everything over as I pick up.
Wow.
And so I haven't made it that far. And that's a part of why I never finish games. I kind of get stuck on learning it. And then by that time, you know, you're kind of blown out of the game because you've played it for so long. And that's a hard thing.
That's insane. Because, yeah, I'm not even 100 hours in. And like, yeah, I already have one character that's, like, above level, like, I think he's, like, 46 or something. And the next character is, like, 10 hours in, and he's, like, 14. Mm-hmm. So, but, no, I actually did something similar with Far Cry 4. When I was playing that one, there was something about, like, the way I was setting up my skills as well as the, like, the order in which I did certain missions where I wasn't super comfortable with how I was playing. I was like, man, I am not playing this game very well. Like, I played Far Cry 3, and I love that one, and a lot of what Far Cry 3 had just came over to this game. So I was like, I should be able to just nail this game. Like, why am I not, like, comfortable with it? And I had, like, 20 hours into a profile, and then I just scrapped it and started over. I was like, yeah, so, and then my next profile went up to, like, 30 hours. I was like, all right, and, like, when I first started out with these missions, I had enough experience with the game and where to go and doing all these things that I was just on point and nailed everything the way I wanted to, because I kind of wanted to play it like a movie in a weird kind of way, where it's, like, everything I do, like, is just, like, I wasn't killing, this sounds so crazy out of context, but I wasn't killing the enemies and, like, freeing settlements the way that I wanted to.
Exactly.
I wasn't doing it with enough flair, or I spent too much money and experience on these things that I didn't realize didn't matter all that much. So I just scrapped one profile and then respec'd it the way I really wanted it to in the next.
I haven't tried any Far Cry games, but I've heard they're really
Some of the best first-person shooters out there. And then Far Cry Primal just came out, and I haven't been able to touch that one yet. But I'm looking forward to picking that one up and putting some time into it.
I've seen some raving reviews, and sadly, if I wasn't on this thing of, you know, finish games.
Yeah, you really need to finish your games. And you chose the games that do not have an ending, so I don't know how that's going to go for you.
Exactly. And so I might have to change some of my games, but that's okay. I mean, I've heard Transistor and Ori in the Blind Forest are smaller games.
Yeah, those would be much shorter. Those are closer. If I had to guess, I mean, just based on the fact that they're, like, indie games, I think they're more of, like, 5-hour campaigns or somewhere shorter to that. I was doing something similar where I was playing, like, all these smaller games just because, like, I heard great things about them, and the smaller games, they're really nice. It's you're paying for, like, a little movie that's, like, very interactive, and a lot of them have really good messages, and they get made because they have, like, important things that they want to say, and they have a cool way of playing games, and they bring ingenuity and new innovative gameplay ideas. So I love to, like, lately I've been departing from the big AAA titles and going more into indie games like Stanley Parable. Rocket League has been a great one.
I've been playing a lot of that.
Yeah, Rocket League's so fun. And then like other indie games that'll pop up for free on either PlayStation or Xbox, and yeah, there's a lot of good ones out there.
It's interesting because you say Rocket League, it's $20 at full price, but it's on sale a lot.
It is, yeah.
And you can get so much playback value from it.
Yeah.
It's interesting because you think that 5-minute, you know, little sports games would get tiring, but for some reasons you just don't get tired because it is so difficult at times. And
yeah,
there's an interesting skill level to it.
There is a learning curve. Like the more you play, the more you learn of, like, using your car to, like, ramp up walls, jumping off the wall to hit the ball, and not like. Like, my first instinct when I was playing the game is, like, whenever I hit the ball, I gotta jump to hit the ball. And then at a certain point, I was like, wait, why am I always jumping to hit the ball? Why don't I just hit the ball?
Exactly.
And then I could get better traction and then get in a better position and get a score. Yeah. It's like, that's a common mistake you'll see with a lot of beginner players, that they always jump or do it all this. And the more that me and my girlfriend play, the better we're getting, just because we're learning all these cool things, and we'll play against people that are better than us, that'll do all these, like, really cool jumps and then boost and
aerial
then hit the
ball.
Oh my gosh. They, like, we were getting... We got demolished by one guy because he was just, he's so good at aerial hits and predicting where the ball was going. It's this weird kind of, like, psychic ability that people get. They are able to read the geometry so well.
Exactly.
They know exactly where the ball's going to go and how it's going to bounce off these walls. It's nuts.
And I just think that, man, I just lost my thought. But, dang, I really lost that thought right
there. Oh, it's okay. Maybe they'll come back.
For a $20 game,
yeah.
I've got some more playback value with that sort of game than I've got with $60 games I've paid for. And it's quite interesting since we've kind of sat on a $60 model, other than 3DS.
And the $60 model really translated to... that was definitely previous generation, too. Mm-hmm. Because I remember... PlayStation 2 games and original Xbox games were $50. Then it jumped up to PS3 and Xbox 360, and then they went up $10 to $60.
Mm-hmm.
So, and now we're getting to a point where a lot of people are buying digitally, so the cost to make and manufacture discs and cases and, like, printed box art and all that, the cost of that is going, like... We're reducing that, which is really neat because a lot of people are moving towards digital.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we're able to get cheaper games from certain companies that release, like, only digitally because they don't have any of the manufacturing cost.
Mm-hmm.
So they get more money, and then, like, Xbox and PlayStation, they'll get their percentage for the release, and any engine that they're using will get a small percentage for their release. But for the bulk of it, yeah, a lot of the money's going to the developers, which is really neat.
Wii U is, Nintendo is the only one I see that does varying models of how much a game would cost, most of the time, for their triple A's.
Really?
Captain Toad, for example, is considered a triple A on Nintendo, interestingly enough, because it's a part of the whole Mario universe.
Okay.
And it was released at 40, and Bayonetta 2, without Bayonetta 1, came out recently for $30.
Really?
Pikmin 3, which has been $60, but technically it's been $90 on any website because Nintendo only releases a certain amount of each of their games.
Yeah, they also would do that with consoles when they would first release. They would manufacture... They would basically manufacture a demand for them and making a lot of people think it's like, oh, they're really hard to get, so you better get them while they're available.
Exactly. So, is now releasing for... I don't want to say this is a fact, but they've said that on March 11th they'll go for $20 or $30, and that breaks that huge demand of $90 for Pikmin 3, which came out nearly 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think that's interesting. And I do think that this year is going to be a great year for games, and last year was a great year for games.
Yeah, last year was great. They had tons of good stuff coming out last year.
If you could put a top five right now, like, of games from last year, what would you
games from last year? All right, so Fallout 4 would be number one. And then I go based on, because I haven't been playing games nearly enough as I used to. Like, I used to be, like, no matter... what game, no matter what it is, if a game came out, I'm getting it and playing it all the time. Like, I would get everything that came out. Whereas now, since my time is limited, I'm working a lot more, and I'm doing a lot more of, like, you know, podcasting and things like this, and writing, and being just more creative in general.
You're a busy guy.
Yeah, yeah, like, I'm diverting into so many hobbies that dedicating time to video games is getting a lot more difficult. So, when it comes to games like Metal Gear Solid 5, which was regarded as one of the best games of that of last year as well, I didn't play a single minute of it. But I still think it was... I know it to be one of the greatest games that came out. Just because so many people liked it. And of the... I actually did play it at a friend's place. And I played it for about, like, you know, half an hour to an hour. And it was really fun. And I usually would never play a Metal Gear Solid game. Like, they just never interested me. But there wasn't enough there to keep me interested. But there was something about 5 where it's like, I came this close to buying it one day and just never pulled the trigger. Just because I was like, I might have the time coming up. And then something blocked it up. It's like, nope, don't have the time, can't buy it.
Exactly.
So, Fallout 4, Metal Gear Solid 5, Until Dawn.
Ooh.
Really good game. Yeah, Until Dawn. That, and seeing that one was interesting because I talked about this previous on the podcast with a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. That one had, like, terrible marketing. Like, it didn't have enough for a lot of people to know to come
in. People considered it PS4 to have shunned it. And
yeah, it was a weird, it was, yeah, they just didn't market it in a way because I'm on the PS4 all the time. I play a lot of video games, and their marketing didn't reach me. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know what it was until it already had come out and people were reviewing and talking about it and saying how amazing it was.
Yeah.
And the fact that it actually, I think it did well, I don't have any numbers in front of me, but based on its popularity and how often people talked about it, it really shows that you can be a good, like, even if the marketing fails, a good game can still get recognized as mm-hmm. a good game. It still can, you know, do what it can. Then, so Until Dawn, Fallout 4, jeez, what came out last year now? I just know, like, a lot.
Witcher. A lot of people would put that on the top of their list. I thought it was an amazing game.
Rise of the Tomb Raider. Mm-hmm. Another great game.
Have you played it?
Yes. Yes, I have. I've played about 4 hours of it. But it's one of those games where I need to finish it.
Exactly. Yeah, I feel
I just haven't gotten around to that. Rocket League came out last year as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, a lot of the games that we were just talking about on the show are all games that came out last year mm-hmm. that are still, and then a lot of them came out like mid to early, so they still, and usually, you know, after a couple months, people, they lose steam and they don't want to talk about them anymore. They mm-hmm. always jump to the next thing. But with these games, they have a lot of staying power now, which is really cool. And then, what games are you most excited for that are coming up?
Oh, man.
Because you're talking about games that are, like, how this year's going to be a good year for games, and I agree. I have a couple in mind that I'm really excited for.
I made a top 10 recently, and I've been adjusting it. but, if I had to name some games that were, I am excited for, Horizon Dawn, PS4.
Yeah.
The dinosaur, mechanical dinosaurs.
Is that PS4 or Xbox One?
It might be both. Okay. Amazon has both of them listed. That has date yet, but I'm excited for that. Pokemon Red and, I mean, Sun and Moon. Just because, you know, I'm a Pokemon fan.
But Pokemon fans are diehard fans.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I don't know how that goes. It's always nice to see a new lineup, even if they get dinky.
Yeah.
A lot of people, you know, sorry to be sidetracked, but a lot of people kind of talked about this last Pokemon and said, you know, they're losing their creativity and because they have a Pokemon named Klefki, which is literally a key on a keychain. If you look at the old Pokemon, like Geodude, he's a rock.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, if you look back at the first 150, there are some
that are like, yeah, there's like two that are super easy that someone definitely thought of. It's Ekans and Arbok because, you know, it's a snake and a cobra and their names are literally snake spelled backwards and exactly. cobra spelled backwards.
Sorry to deviate. Overwatch, definitely.
Oh yes. Overwatch.
I was one of the lucky individuals to receive a beta
mm-hmm.
And I've been playing that a lot. I was excited for Battleborn, but after getting a little bit of taste of that and comparing Overwatch sadly with it mm-hmm. It didn't mechanically feel well to me.
That's where Overwatch is so pissed because, Battleborn, the people at Gearbox gotta be really pissed because Overwatch was supposed to come out before Battleborn,
uh-huh.
and then they push their date back to where they're actually releasing close at the same time now.
Exactly, and that's gonna play really hardly on their numbers at the beginning on release. And I think sadly, Overwatch is gonna win. Mm-hmm. There's just
I don't think Gearbox is gonna be like in a major detriment to that though, just mm-hmm. because I mean Gearbox is a pretty good name after like the Borderlands series and doing all that. Like they now have like they have a persona about them that people are really enjoying.
Exactly. Nothing to Gearbox.
A lot of people are saying that Overwatch is better than that. So you're not alone there. From mm-hmm. what I heard last PAX when they were talking about this, because there was a Battleborn booth mm-hmm. and I ran into a lot of people who were just like, well, it's not Overwatch.
Exactly. Division, I'm kind of excited to see how that turns out.
Oh, man, my interest in that game has died down so much since the first announcement.
I'm glad you said that, because it was top three on my list. I played it, and it is actually now on my top 20.
Oh.
And it has dropped really badly. I played the beta, a lot of it, and sadly, I don't see how much bigger it can get. The mobs are all human beings, and when they're all human beings, you're limited in creativity. And I'm not saying that because they can't make bionics or anything. I'm saying that because they're realistic human beings, and based on the gameplay video I've seen, I have this idea that the Division, Ubisoft, has been only showing us the beginning because they kind of don't want to have this giant idea of what their world is kind of limited to. Mm-hmm. I've actually seen an interesting review on it, or a conversation about how when the Division was first previewed, it seemed like an extremely complex game.
Yes.
Would you agree with that?
Oh, 100%, yeah.
And this, I can't remember his name, but he deserves credit. He talks about how the Division has this very open image of a complex game, but if you break it down, it is a very simplistic game that boasts a very complex system. Mm-hmm. In many ways, if you look at it, the skill system is very Borderlands-ish.
Yeah.
If you look at the open worldness, it looks like another survival DayZ H1Z1.
Yeah.
And I wish I could kind of talk, like, remember the video so everyone can see it, but
yeah.
It's this very, it's...
So it's basically like taking a lot of elements that we have seen before and putting it into an environment that we've seen before.
Exactly.
And then it boasts that it's new and different when it's like it's actually kind of shallow. It's not delivering anything that's super impactful or anything. Mm-hmm. Because what I was interested in when I first saw the trailers, like several years ago, I can't even remember how long now because it's been delayed over and over and over.
Exactly.
Again.
3 to 4 years.
Like, oh man. I remember thinking, oh, this is going to be a game that me and two of my buds will be able to jump on, we'll go through these cool campaigns, this open world, almost, we kind of expected, like, almost like a Fallout-type world, but, like, you know, set in modern day, so drastically
yeah.
different, but almost like having a Fallout experience, but with friends, and doing it to, like, the beat of a Tom Clancy drum, which, you know, I mean, I was a huge fan of the Splinter Cell games. I'm hoping that they're going to announce a new one at this E3.
Mm-hmm.
I played a lot of their Ghost Recon games.
Recon was good.
A couple Rainbow Six games. Yeah, it's like, I'm a fan of Tom Clancy. It's like, I play their games.
Mm-hmm.
So I was excited to see, like, Tom Clancy do this neat multiplayer thing, and when they showed at the end of it, it's like, no, it's going to be an MMO specifically.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like MMOs. I can't get into them, mainly because you have to rely on the trust of other people that they're not going to shoot you when you run into them.
Exactly.
So, and I hate that, just because knowing how the internet and anyone connected to that works, as well as, like, you know, just playing games online. GTA Online is a better example for this. But everyone's aggressive and they just want to kill other players because they get enjoyment
exactly.
out of it. They have fun doing that. And I want to be in a thing where it's like me, two of my buds, going through, dispensing justice through New York after this massive apocalyptic disease has spread about. And it seems like they're not going to be able to deliver that experience that they initially showed because, I mean, they had such cool stuff. What really sold me was there was a part where a guy was, you know, posted up against a car, and then an enemy was shooting at him, and the bullets were flying through, hitting the car with this awesome poom noise that sounds like the same that I would hear in movies,
mm-hmm.
as well as, like, it was going through the bullets were going through the glass, and the glass was shattering the most realistic way I had ever seen. So I was like, oh, this game's going to be a game changer. And after so many years, so many other things have come out where it's like, oh, all the game changers have happened, and now the Division's going to be late to the party.
So the Division is kind of like almost a standard now in a way.
Yeah.
It's I agree with you. It had so much potential to be the new thing maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But it took it 4 years to come out.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. I had this grand vision of it, and sadly, when it came to it, playing it in the beta, it was really based on interacting with random people. And yeah, like you said, trusting the internet community is kind of difficult.
Yeah.
And I had my run-in with scumbags. Not to say that I didn't have some good runs with, you know, random people.
Yeah.
There was some good, but it's hard to trust and trust in randoms,
mm-hmm,
and have fun with it.
Yeah.
It's a game that I envisioned playing with your friends would be extremely fun.
Absolutely. Going against AI opponents.
Exactly.
Raiding and finding new weapons that you can trade with your friends. Like,
mm-hmm,
you find a new heavy machine gun that you can, like, oh, I'm not a heavy machine gun user, but my friend can use this. You give it over,
mm-hmm,
to him, and then you're loaded up.
But you can't even trade with your friends, which,
oh,
is the saddest thing. And, I thought it would be like a modern, real-life apocalypse Borderlands.
Yeah.
That's what I envisioned,
mm-hmm,
it as. And,
mm-hmm,
sadly, not saying that, because the game has not come out, I can't give my, you know, I can't hammer it into the ground and say it's dead.
But you can give your experience of how you,
exactly,
went through the beta.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, and because that's the one thing that I want to talk to you about, is how many betas have you played this year?
This
past couple months?
I played the Overwatch beta, the Blade and Soul beta, the Division beta,
jeez,
the Tom Clank, Rainbow Six Siege beta, the Black Desert beta, the Paragon beta. I've played a lot of my betas, and some of them I haven't touched, to be honest.
Gotcha. Have you ever been in a beta, and then when the game released, post-beta,
mm-hmm,
of course, that wouldn't release pre-beta, that doesn't make any sense, that there was drastic differences between your beta experience and the game experience?
I would say not this year. I would say in the previous year, there was dramatic change.
Okay, do you have any examples that come to mind?
I think it was, I want to say it was a MOBA, and I can't remember what MOBA it was exactly,
okay,
but what the game felt like in the beta was amazing, and when it came out on release, actually, it felt horrible.
That is definitely not what I expected.
And actually, Battleborn might be one of those.
Gotcha.
Not in the sense that when it's on release, it's going to be horrible. It just, I was excited for the game.
Mm-hmm.
I went to PAX, and I looked at the billboard, and I was like, Battleborn.
They have their giant statue and,
exactly,
everything. Yeah.
And I played it, and sadly, it just didn't feel good, and I'm so sad, but this is one of the betas that kind of turned me off from the game,
yeah,
and I will, yeah, if it turns out good on release, then fine.
Yeah.
But,
and see, and what I'm getting at now is that beta doesn't really mean what it used to mean, because I remember when I first heard about beta, and I think it was around the time that Halo 2 was coming out.
That's
or,
a long time ago.
Or maybe even Halo 3, because it might have been high school that I think I remember people saying Halo 3 beta. That's what I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And what it used to be is beta was the multiplayer test. Is,
oh,
we're gonna have
Halo Reach. I remember Halo Reach beta. That's
okay.
That's my first vision in beta, but go on.
Yeah, because I think mine was Halo 3 before that multiplayer came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember people saying, it's like, oh yeah, are you going to be on the Halo 3 beta or the Halo beta? I don't remember which Halo, but it was a Halo beta. But I was like, this is the first I've heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what's a beta? I don't know what they're talking about. It was so bizarre to me. And it was the multiplayer test, is that they open up their servers, they let you jump on,
mm-hmm,
and you do a multiplayer test of their servers so they can figure out how many people are going to be jumping on, if their servers are going to crash, if the multiplayer experience is kind of like, is working and being functional the way it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now, people are using betas more as, like, straight-up demos. They're not really even using them as testing.
Exactly.
Or exactly. It's all about being demos now. So, because when's the last time you actually played a quote-unquote demo? Where it was labeled as this demo.
As a demo, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I just played a demo recently for Bravely
Default?
Yes.
Yeah.
And that, actually, I would compare that to all the betas I played this year, actually.
Really? And it was a demo?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And actually, the demo was more unique in the sense that if you played the demo and it was not a part of any of the storyline of the actual game.
Mm-hmm.
It actually just displayed to you, you know, the mechanics. And you could take those prizes and put it into your actual game.
Ooh.
And that is almost comparable to every demo beta I've played.
Yeah.
And the word beta has been so convoluted, and we're starting to have these things called, like, early access and alphas and Kickstarters, and I'm sadly not happy with the direction any of those are going.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's weird that they found a way to they made a demo more appealing to gamers just by kind of changing the vernacular.
Mm-hmm.
And associating it with something, where it's like, a beta means that you're part of something exclusive. You're not allowed. Mm-hmm. And that's the other thing that a beta is. It's oftentimes exclusive. You mm-hmm. have to be invited, or you have a code, or there's something that gives you specific access to this very private demo of a game. But it's not called a demo. It's a beta.
Exactly. And it's interesting because the first beta keys that go out now are mm-hmm. to streamers and to YouTubers.
Yeah.
And they will play it, and they will demo it. To all their viewers.
It's all marketing tactics, yeah.
And it's not about, at that point, to be honest, it's not about testing your server load.
Yeah.
It's about kind of, like you said, demoing it to the public, and everyone gets really hyped, and they really want the game,
mm-hmm.
and they never open up a beta for some of these games I've seen that are streamed, and people actually purchase them. And it's a really good marketing strategy. I'm not going to talk it down because it's really smart.
It's brilliant, yeah.
But the community I've seen get frustrated because they're starting to see that only YouTubers, only streamers are getting these, and they only get to watch.
Yeah.
And I get that beta is an exclusive thing, but when you're not letting the actual players interested, you know, kind of test it sometimes, you know, it's kind of frustrating.
It really is, yeah, because the only time that I would say I actually play demos now are mm-hmm. when I go to PAX, because mm-hmm. they have, like, these specific events that you want to play while you're there. And even now, when I go to PAX, I don't even do the big AAAs anymore, because a lot of them, it's just multiplayer, where it's like, you're going to play this new multiplayer, but it's like, I'm not a multiplayer-only guy. It's like, also, what about your story? What's going on here? Because the last AAA thing that I did, and it was the only AAA thing that I did at this last PAX, was The Division. Because yeah. that one was the furthest from release at the time. I'm not sure if they changed their time frame since or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that one was, it's like, if I want to experience something well before it comes out, all the other ones are just like, a couple months down the road, so it's like, I'm already, it's either, at this point in the timeline, I'm either sold or I'm not, so I'm not going to mm-hmm. play those games. But The Division, I wanted to see if it could, you know, hold up to what I thought it would, and it was very underwhelming. I was just very unimpressed with what they had. They had some neat AI stuff and, like, decent cover system. The graphics were a little off just because, you know, it's still early stages. I didn't expect, like, crisp graphics, but mm-hmm. yeah, a lot of the mechanics were really fun, and it was neat, you know, third-person shooter. But when it got to that multiplayer section where it's like, okay, you're now going to be going against all the other human players here.
With
you and during this demo. And he's like, you could either shoot them or you can pacify and you can stay remain friends. And if you shoot them and kill them, you'll be marked. And I was like, okay, can I talk to the other players in any way? And he's like, no, you cannot. And I was like, well, they're going to shoot me now, aren't they? Just because that's our instinct as gamers.
Exactly.
Is if we see another moving person with a gun, we need to kill that person.
Mm-hmm.
And that just ruined the experience. But yeah, and I was looking around, and a lot of things were multiplayer. A lot of things were, they weren't trying to sell you on it. They were just like, we want you to play this multiplayer that we already know that you're gonna purchase, mm-hmm. and we want you to tell other people about it. It's not really making it super exclusive to us. It's like they'll just release a beta down the line and everyone will get to play it. So,
exactly.
But like, because they were giving out like Rainbow Six beta codes like crazy.
Yeah.
Like I didn't even have to do anything and they would just fall into my lap. I just I ended up having like 12 codes just in my pockets. Where did they come from?
And you're just giving them out.
They were doing reverse pickpocketing with their with their codes. They wanted everyone to play it, and they wanted you to give it to your friends and doing all this, which is kind of smart, but I don't know. The whole atmosphere to PAX and demoing stuff seems totally different, because when my friends, when he went about 6 years ago or so, and he played Dead Space 2 as a demo there, and it was, like, exclusive. It was going to be out for a really long time, but you can play this level of Dead Space 2. He would come back and tell me about it, and it was super awesome, and there was no footage of it anywhere. It's like he got to experience this really cool Dead Space stuff. And now, you go to PAX, you'll play a multiplayer game, and people can go online, and they'll see the other multiplayer demos that other people have done, and it's like, it's all the same level, and it's nothing's really unique anymore. It's I don't know. I don't know really where I'm going with this. I'm just saying that PAX makes me sad a lot of the time. So I spend a lot of my time at PAX at the indie booths playing all these games that I wouldn't hear about otherwise. So I got to see some really fun indie games and hang out over there. So
yeah, I definitely agree. I think PAX is becoming about just the community of gamers getting together. It's not about the demo focus.
Yeah,
anymore.
It's not about getting the games more notoriety or giving you exclusive experience of the games. I have treated just like as you said. It's because I'll have friends that I'll only ever see at PAX. And so it's a really neat excuse to hang out with other gamers, and we'll go to a bar that is being sponsored by I don't remember what, GameSpot or something. It's being sponsored by a game website, and so they have computers and keyboards and World of Tanks all set up, and everyone can play in a bar.
Awesome.
Yeah, is that? And so they had all sorts of cool stuff like that, and yeah, I have no problems with. Those are the cool parts of PAX. Mm-hmm. What I really do miss is that specific feeling of being the first to access something, and kind of that little reward of being super passionate about gaming and contributing and getting a ticket to PAX. Yeah,
to
getting
see
a
these
gold
games.
Ticket to play these games that no one will else see, and it's just a little treat for you. And now, yeah, it's not that I want people to not get those experiences or whatever, or try and be above other people. It's the fact that they're shifting it over to where it's like, oh, we need to make sure that everyone gets a chance and everyone gets to do this and everyone gets to see. And they dumb down all these demos and exclusive stuff to something that nothing's exciting anymore.
I definitely agree. Even I went to PAX 2 years in a row, and so far the experience has really changed. This year, League of Legends was even at PAX, and that was a huge thing for a lot of people.
I know, like, well, for guys who aren't super into League of Legends, like myself, I was actually very thankful, just because that meant that more tickets and more, and less tickets being sold so that people can just go to the League of Legends events, and maybe even less people, because when they have more people, like, the year before when they had the league tournaments, there were so many people at PAX. They were capping lines like ridiculous. Granted, that was still an issue this year as well, but there's just so many people going now that it's ruining the experience for all those who have to go. Granted, if I say that I want less people to go there, that limits my chances of getting a ticket because of how popular it is. But quite frankly, I would like to run that risk of either not getting a ticket or having a better experience if I do. Just because, like, being able to not access certain things just because the lines fill up so fast is just bananas.
I also think without the League of Legends section there, and I'm a League of Legends player, but I'm excited that they weren't there because it opened up a whole entire section for more games
That's
to be
true.
There.
That's true. There was so much more indie stuff and way more cooler things. Like, that was really neat because I remember going to all these extra floors and there was so much stuff there.
And
lines were still kept like ridiculous, but, you know, there was way more stuff to check out. It was a really awesome experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And indie, people are like, oh, not AAA, that's not that great. But in my opinion, every time you walk into the indie section, there is going to be a game in there that's going to be the gem. It is something that you've been thinking about that should exist, and it does exist. Mm-hmm. And you get to talk with these passionate developers mm-hmm. about their game, and you get to play a lot of them.
Absolutely.
And there is no 5-hour line for these ones. Mm-hmm. And I actually bought two indie games while I was there.
Oh, nice.
Keep On Talking and No One Dies.
Oh, yes. One? Yeah, because I got, there was a cool little area at PAX. I don't know if you found it because a lot of people missed it, but near the Cards Against Humanity booth and mm-hmm. all that, like the cards, there's like a hallway that they sponsored and they had a specific section.
Oh, yeah.
There was a room where everyone was playing Keep Talking, No One Dies on a giant projector, and mm-hmm. everyone would just sit there and watch people do this, and you can sign up. And they would give you a rough time frame as to when you would need to be back mm-hmm. in order to participate. So you'd put a team name down, go, experience PAX, check out some other indie stuff, come back, and then it'll be your turn. You don't have to wait in a line or stand still. And they also had chairs there for you, which was really neat. So mm-hmm. it was like, that was one of my favorite experiences, was being able to do that.
Mm-hmm. I saw that, and I didn't have the opportunity to play it. But yeah. when it came out, I bought it, because I knew exactly what it was,
yeah.
and I even printed out the manual yeah. on the binder. Two of them sitting yeah. right there.
Is it released?
Yeah.
Oh, we need to play soon.
Oh,
we will do it.
Definitely.
Because I would love to do that.
And I've showed it to so many people, and people are like, what is this game? Where do you find it? And I said, I went to PAX, I went to the indie booth, and I saw this amazing yeah. game mm-hmm. that is just so unique in ideas.
Yeah.
And it was worth the $15. It was worth going to PAX. And
oh, yeah.
I would say it's one of my favorite games of yeah. last year.
And I may have been a little too rough on PAX when I said stuff earlier, because it's moments like that that are, like, truly what PAX should mm-hmm. be. And that's, and we, the fact that we're still getting them, like, last PAX wasn't a shitty PAX. The PAX before that I didn't like all that much, but last PAX was great. There's still so much going on, and there's cool stuff like that that you get to see, and mm-hmm. you end up buying it when you're done. Games like, I talked to all the, like the guys who worked on Magic Portal, who are really cool developers. It was like a team of like 3 people, and they're mm-hmm. there just promoting their game that just released, and it was like, yeah, give it a shot, man. It's a really fun game, doing all this. We really worked really hard on it. I was like, absolutely. So I went home, bought Magic Portal, and it's a really good game. And there's all sorts of cool people at the indie booths, like the people that made Charlie Murder. Charlie Murder was an Xbox Live Arcade game, and it was like, it fit my personality for the time that I saw it as well, because like mm-hmm. in high school I was like punk rock and all about heavy metal and hardcore, and it's a game that's, you know, side scroller beat 'em up
mm-hmm.
With really like crazy cartoonish style and whole punk rock soundtrack, and it's about a punk rock like death metal band that makes it famous and then are attacked by demons and haunted by their past, and mm-hmm. I was like, this is like awesome, I love this game. So I bought it immediately after I was done with PAX. It's one of the main reasons why I go to PAX, is you find those gems that just really speak to you and are just, it doesn't matter if it's popular with everybody, at least it's great to you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
exactly. I would equate the indie booth to almost, did you watch E3 for PlayStation last year?
Yes.
Do you remember Unravel, the preview for
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
When the creator of it, or the main guy,
yeah.
came up, he was nervous and he was so excited about
his
game.
Stammering, he was smiling the whole time, but just so nervous.
But yeah. he was so passionate about his
yeah.
game. And when I go to indie booths and I'm talking to these developers about the game,
yeah.
I see, they're not shaking, but I see
yeah.
the same charm.
Yeah, you see the same charm. You see also the same level of talent.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't get that stage.
Exactly.
And so you have to give them your time so that you can be, you can help them. Like they get their stage a person at a time.
Exactly.
That's really what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so every time that you come to the booth or pass by or stop and pay attention, you're adding to that crowd that they deserve.
Exactly.
Because I played some really fun ones. I remember this one game that I played last PAX where it was everyone played as farm animals, and the goal was to get from point A to point B.
Interesting.
And you get to lay either traps or platforms to help you to get from point A to point B. And the reason why there's traps is by the end of all the rounds, you want to be the last person alive.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to set traps that, well, if people land on it, it's going to cut them in half, or it's going to do this. And so you have all these
yeah.
animals just jumping, and then it just, every level you add more traps or more platforms or more traps and more traps. And it just gets so ridiculous. You have this giant Rube Goldberg machine that you're just trying to dance around. And it's like buzzsaws and ice.
That is crazy.
It was a really fun game. I really wish I remembered the name of it because it deserves all the credit. It was really fun. I ended up playing it twice. I was like, I played it, got back in line. I was like, yeah, I want to play that again.
Exactly. And usually they're the least populated, so you get to play it thoroughly and enjoy it.
Yeah.
I mean, you also get a lot of those games at discount, surprisingly enough. You know, you think indie developers, they're charging only $15 for their game to begin with, but you go to PAX and there's...
And it costs money to get a booth there, too. It's not cheap.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. I enjoy the indie booths more than anything else at PAX, to be honest. The triple A's, they're big sections, but they have representatives that have been trained to tell you this specific script, and it just doesn't... I'm excited for them. They're triple A. They're titles that are amazing.
For Honor, for example. Do you know that game? Yeah, I am pumped for that game. I haven't seen much of it lately, but when it was announced and that there was a demo at PAX, there was not enough time for me to play that demo because it was like a huge, long wait. And I was like, there's too much PAX to be experienced for me to sit in this line that long. But For Honor looks awesome, and I was like, I was like, okay, these guys are they're mixing it up. They're doing a bit of a they're taking a bit more risks or trying something new. Like that's, and I was like, For Honor is a standout for me. And
it looks good. The huge thing with the gaming industry I have a problem with right now is anything that. Any formula that works, we'll see 20 of those same games.
That's true.
And I think that last year and this year were really great in breaking those.
Yes.
Rainbow Six Siege, it's a different FPS. I'll give credit to that. It's not for everyone, but it changed up the formula and made it new, and it was really fun. Metal Gear Solid. Fallout 4 was a given.
Yeah.
So many people were waiting for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
They, for the most part, I hear everyone got exactly what they wanted and some new content from it.
Like a lot of the major game, like, websites that I listen to or podcasts or whatever, I've heard a lot of people, like, maybe they set the bar too high, but I can't speak for them, but a lot of people were like, it didn't really... meet all the expectations that I had, or it didn't really grab me the right way that the other Fallout games did. For me, it matched it and exceeded. I think it's the best Fallout game that I've ever played. But for other people, like, I heard a surprising amount of, like, less enthusiastic people than I would expect. And so I just thought that was interesting, but it still made millions of dollars, and we'll get another Fallout, and maybe they'll be happier with the next one. So, and I'm sure they still plunged, like, 60 plus to 200 hours into that game and still came away with, like, these gripes. It's a little weird, but, yeah.
Exactly. And that kind of sucks when you come out of game, you know, after 100 hours and you have gripes about it. But
yeah, I mean, because maybe the other thing is, like, they're committed to trying and enjoying it, but there's still something about it that they just can't enjoy. And it's not on me to tell them to just get over it, because they're entitled to that. Mm-hmm. Like, and the developers got to do what they can to try and appeal to everybody. And maybe Fallout 4 was just something there where it was just, it became something so big and so reputable where it's like, now there's no way we're going to please everybody. And they're going to end up with a fan base that slows down a little bit as opposed to gets constantly bigger. So, but I have no idea because I haven't looked at any numbers and I haven't heard from everybody. So we'll see.
Well, you enjoyed it. And that's the main thing.
That's the thing, yeah, is I love me some Fallout. So, and if people don't like it, then yeah, that's their opinion, and I'll just keep on enjoying it. So,
I mean, when we were talking about betas, and I just brought up the point that I have a huge gripe with the gaming industry.
Yeah.
My main gripe, and it kind of relates to betas, is early access games on Steam. My main problem with early access is we are promising you this content, Mm-hmm. And we assume it will be released in the future, but you can pay for it now. Mm-hmm. And my biggest problem with that is a lot of times games go into early access, stay in early access for 2 years or a year, and people pay for, you know, the minimal content it already has. Mm-hmm. And there is no way to ensure that these developers will ever actually give what they promised.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of games right now that the developers end up abandoning it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's okay. I think that as gamers, the way we fix the trend of where games go is with our buying power.
Yeah, we vote with our dollars. Yeah.
And there are many times when, you know, like DayZ is a good example. Early access, $30. People pay for it. And if you look at that game, it is absolutely horrendous. Every patch they release, there are new scripters, there are new hackers.
Mm-hmm.
The game has been in early access for maybe 2 years.
Yeah.
And it is not finished, and it's not been released in full game yet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
There are so many games I've bought, and I've said, this game looks amazing. Mm-hmm. And I know it's early access, and I'm hesitant, and I buy it. And 3 months down the line, you know, the developer releases a little bit of content, but abandons it afterwards.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the direction we're heading with Kickstarter and early access.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a good trend.
Yeah.
There are good games. Have you heard of Ark Survival?
Ark Survival, no. Yeah. No, I have. Game. Yeah, the dinosaur game, yeah.
Yeah. It was released. It says it's in early access. Every day, the developer, every 2 or 3 days, releases notes or a patch for the game.
Really?
It has brought my faith back for early access. I have been watching it. I haven't played it in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I bought it when it was released. And every day, or every 2 or 3 days, I have a new patch for that game. And it brings new content. And every patch note, the team says, this is what we're planning.
Gotcha.
And I really like that. And
It's making you, the customer, a part of the project.
Exactly.
Which is what your money should be paying for. Not only are you paying for to get the game early when it's in its earlier stages,
mm-hmm.
You are also paying as, like, I'm contributing to this cause to make this game a reality.
I'm investing.
Yeah, I'm an investor in your thing. And so them keeping you updated, because you're investing in something that's not even fully done. So the fact that they're taking the time to make you these notes and tell you the progress, like, that's awesome. Like, that should be the rule to early access.
I agree. And Kickstarters are a good example of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
People see this idea. They invest this idea.
Yeah.
With in mind, if you go to Kickstarter, there's no assurance your money's going to go anywhere, sadly.
Yeah.
But have you actually seen that one? There's one developer who said, I'm going to release this game. He had a goal of $35,000.
Mm-hmm.
He got $150,000. And he actually wrote a note saying, you guys are fools. There's no assurance that a game ever would get released. And he took the money and ran.
Really?
And there are almost...
When did this happen?
About a year ago.
Oh, wow.
There are 5 different examples of this happening where a team says we need this amount of money, and it goes way over how much they need, but the game never comes out because they run out of money and stuff.
Yeah.
And I get this supports indie developers. Mm-hmm. I mean, they don't have AAA funding.
Yeah.
But this puts a bad taste in your mouth when this is constantly happening. And a lot more games are being released as early access.
Yeah.
They're not even being finished. Mm-hmm. And I love betas in the sense that you get to interact with the game and you know kind of what it's going to be like. And you know there's going to be a final product at the end of the window for most of these games. And early access doesn't promise you that. Kickstarters don't promise you that. And I think it's kind of ridiculous that there are a lot of games that stay in early access for maybe a year, and then the developer just says, we're done developing this game, and then a week later they post their new game on the news of that game and say, this is my new project.
Ugh.
You know, I'm a huge indie developer, like, fan, and I really watch small games because I think they deserve the most support. AAA is always going to get their money. Indie developers aren't. They're sometimes they're one or like a couple people team who spend 2 years on a game, and if it's great, I think they deserve, you know, support for it.
Yeah.
But early access doesn't help those developers. Mm-hmm. It puts a bad taste in gamers to not trust early access.
Yeah, that kind of it kind of puts in the perspective of some of these. The neat thing is with games like Unravel or Child of Light, which are these small games with a lot of heart and a lot of passion, and people work really hard. And they're being published by these big AAA companies.
Exactly.
So they're being published by Ubisoft. They're being published by EA. They're being published by, I think EA. Maybe they were both Ubisoft, now that I think about it. I don't remember. Do you remember who published Unravel?
Unravel is Ubisoft.
Okay.
Child of Light is Ubisoft.
Yeah, they're both Ubisoft. So Ubisoft, in particular, is... They have that supervision power of saying, yeah, we trust this team. They're working for us, in a sense. We're giving them the money so that we, as, you know, as the customers, can pay for a quality finished product. Mm-hmm. They don't need to come to us and get our money early so that they can keep working on it. They can come to a bigger company who's able to say, you're allowed to have this much money and make it for this amount, and then release a quality game for the customers, working within the confines of these budget. Granted, I mean, we don't have the way to look into how much money they have and how much they're able to work with and whether or not those funds are able to meet the amount of time it takes. But based on the fact that those particular indie developers are the ones who work hard and want to make a quality game and deliver something that's great, we're able to get these really, really cool games like Unravel and Child of Light.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There are a lot of games, too, that PS4 and Xbox sponsor. I know for
That's
a fact
true.
That PS4 went to...
Psyonix?
The Dark Souls team.
Oh, yeah.
And said, you know, we will pay you to make a game. And Bloodborne was born.
Yeah.
And it is a fabulous game, and it introduced me to the Dark Souls series. I really want to see, like, PS4 and huge publishers... really put money into creating games.
PS4 in particular has, or Sony, I should say, has been really good about making indie games in the into the public eye. They bring forth a lot of the and give them the notoriety they need. They'll post them as like major releases in their PlayStation store, and they'll get giant icons that they could do. Xbox does it to specific ones on like certain deals. Like they did it for like Super Meat Boy. They did it for Charlie Murder, which I think was XBLA specific. And then I thought there was another one that they did. I'm sure they've done plenty more, but yeah, PS4 in particular is really good about that.
Trying to go through everything I said earlier. Trying to come to the conclusion of what I was trying to say earlier.
We're bringing it all together. I'll stop interrupting you now. It's my problem.
It was, I think it was Nintendo. an individual at Nintendo. I don't know if it was Kojima. I don't know who it was exactly. But you've probably seen a meme of it. It's pretty popular. He said, you know, it's better to release a game later when it's perfect than release a game early and it's not.
I think I remember that quote. It's a delayed game is eventually perfect, but a broken game is broken forever.
Exactly. And I, you know, I really enjoy that statement. If you ever watch any of the Nintendo, like, lead developers, like Kojima and stuff, who talk about their games, they are so passionate about it.
Yeah.
The leader of Zelda, the new Zelda coming out, he was talking about Link riding a horse, and the horse was riding towards a tree, and then all of a sudden the horse dodges the tree, and he says, "Did you see that?" And people were just like, "What?" And he said, you know, like, a real horse would never let its master run into a tree. It has its mind of its own, and so it's going to dodge the tree. And he talks about the little details they put into the game with so much passion, you know. And I love that in Japanese developers because you see wholesome games. Their quality assurance for Nintendo games are crazy. I don't even want to know what they put into that, you know.
Yeah.
Like, most people aren't unsatisfied with Nintendo games. With that in mind, I've heard working at Nintendo is really hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to see that passion in every game. We're starting to see games go into number 5, number 6, number 7. And it seems as if we're trying to milk it. The games.
In a way, yeah.
I mean, there are hardcore fans, and I know they want the games to keep coming out. And yeah. I want it for them, too, because that's great. Like, for you, when you saw Fallout 4, you were like, yes, this is the best Fallout 4.
And Mortal Kombat X, it's the best version of Mortal Kombat.
Exactly, I've played that. I love that. It was my introduction to Mortal Kombat, actually, surprisingly. I want to see that. And I think that this year has a lot of potential.
Yeah.
Last year was a great year. This year was a great year. Well, so far.
Yeah.
And I want us to continue on that trend, really. And early access isn't the way to go.
Yeah. Shut down the early access.
Exactly.
Or at least do it, like, do it only in the style of Ark, because apparently that's the only one that knows how to do it right.
Set up rules and boundaries saying you're forcing people to pay for a quality product at release.
Yeah.
Whether that's a year or two down the line. But if you can't release a product like that, you know, you kind of have to reimburse your investors somehow.
Yeah.
Because
I know a lot of people that I know one person in particular, he considers himself an investor just by, like, purchasing a game, so he feels like there's a certain amount of time limit that comes with that, but I don't think so. I mean, it's like, based on how it is, it's like, if they release a game, you can either be a customer, or you can be someone who's not a customer. You're either a customer or you're not. You can't be an investor on something that's already done. Your input is no longer really valid unless it comes to the sequel. Even then, like, there's nothing to say that they're going to listen to you or not. When it comes to something like Early Access or Kickstarter or something like that, where it's like, the main thing that everyone will be asking for is, I want a finished game that's fun and meets everything that you promised me originally. And that's what it really means to be an investor, as well as, like, you want to stay up to date on how it's going. You want to know like, if anything's being cut out or if anything new's being added. Like, that's what it means to be an investor, because you have money involved in this. You were given a promise, which is why you're doing all this. And that's just it. It's just a promise. It's not a contract in any way.
Exactly.
So there are people who are exploiting this, that it's just all it is. It's basically a gentleman's agreement of just handshake, I'll deliver you what I told you I would deliver. So, and since the world is a terrible place and we have people exploiting this, it's nice to see people like at ARK, working on ARK and doing all this, who have faith in the system and can show how it can work, but at the same time, there's just so many bad, like, people doing it wrong, that one person doing it right is not enough. And there might be more. It's like, granted, I don't know all the early access games that might be working and have worked, but
exactly.
At this point, like, it's a rough road.
I totally agree with everything you said, and that was a really good perspective on it, that, yeah, it is just a promise. Yeah.
That's all it is. There's no contract, there's no, like... there could be, like, a terms and service agreement, like the little box you always have to click before you can hit the next button to donate.
Mm-hmm.
But in that, it could just be, once you give your money to this person, it's gone forever. That's all it could be. Exactly. No one ever reads them.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely don't read them myself. I don't know. I think you're passionate about games.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm passionate about games, too. And all we want to see is, you know, it's all about the experience.
Yeah.
And I totally agree with you. Once you have a game come out in its fullest, you know,
mm-hmm.
you don't really have a say into it. And I kind of also think that whatever the developers have envisioned for a game,
mm-hmm.
you know, as players, we do have a say in that slightly, but I think that we should always just trust in the mm-hmm. vision of developers, you know?
Yeah.
They're the storytellers.
Yeah, you're paying for the experience that they think... The experience that they want you to have.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you don't like something doesn't mean it should be changed.
Exactly.
And so, if... Like, when it comes to something that's early access, if there's something that's in there that you don't like,
mm-hmm.
you don't want to be putting your money in there and saying, but I want this to be changed. That's mm-hmm. That feels totally different. When it comes to the development of a video game, you're giving money to people so that they can make an because you believe in the experience that they want to deliver to you,
mm-hmm.
not because you want to have input on what it is. You just want to stay up to date on what their experience is going to be delivering to you.
Exactly.
Like Last of Us. The ending to Last of Us tested so poorly with audience tests or whatever, and
really?
Everyone on the team thought it was, like, a really bad idea to release that ending and all that. And the guys who were the heads of development for the game were like, well, we're going to release this ending because that's the ending that we want these players to have.
Exactly.
It's not just about them, it's also about us. We're telling a story, not them.
It goes back to exactly what you said early on. You know, when you were, I can't remember exactly, but you were comparing a game like a cinematic experience.
Yeah.
When you watch a movie and it reaches its end, you know, sometimes the audience doesn't agree with the ending.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes down to it, it was the director telling the story, and mm-hmm. you paid for it. You know, it's for the experience, and mm-hmm. whether you agree with it or not,
yeah.
it is down to the director's,
mm-hmm.
you know, hands to what happens.
Yeah, it's kind of the thing where it's like, if you have a bad experience with a game, or there's something you don't like it. Don't like about it, mm-hmm. all you can really do is just reflect on it, move on, and decide whether or not it was worth your time and money.
Mm-hmm.
Either way, you're not getting any of it back. So it's basically making an informed decision of to whether or not you're going to, like, if it's a movie, you're going to see another movie by that director, you're going to see all that. But, yeah, if you pay for something and then you get an experience, you really got to reflect on whether or not it was worth that time and money. So it's like, if you're having a great experience, like paying into ARK and staying up to date and doing all that, but you've had terrible experiences with other ones, you're probably not going to invest in anything or be an early access user to anything but the people that just work on ARK, because based on your experience, that's the only one that does it right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you don't agree with what the game is, the direction the game is going, you know, the next time the sequel comes out, don't pre-order it.
Yeah, don't pre-order it. Wait for it to be done, read a review, get an informed decision. That's what IGN is there for. That's what all these gamer websites are there
for. Exactly.
Is they give you an inside look as to their experience with the game, and they may disagree on whether or not, like, certain things that you like or didn't like, but at least gives you an idea of what's happening in the game and how it works and how it appeals to this person or doesn't appeal to this person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's all about making informed decisions, voting with your dollars.
Exactly. If you support a company and you really love their games, you know, fine, pre-order a game. But I don't like the idea of pre-orders, the idea of just paying for a product without knowing what it's going to be like. I think it's best if you're questionable about a game to wait until release date and do what exactly Doc said. Look up a review or watch some gameplay yourself. Not enough to spoil the game for yourself.
I know, that's the other thing. So, yeah, there's so many Let's Plays out there, you could just stumble into a video and spoil a game for yourself. That's a whole different topic in general.
But, like, if it interests you and you're questionable about it, use your money as power and wait until the day it releases to purchase it or not. If it's not something you want to play at release, then fine, you're not going to buy it. But when you pre-order something, you're guaranteeing the money.
Yeah.
And you're already saying, here, take my money. And it's a sunk cost at that point. So you have no reason to complain when it comes out. And it's
because, and also, like, if you're pre-ordering, that's something where you will get your money back, too. Because a pre-order is not early access investment. It's not. A pre-order is just saying, hold on to my money now because I have the money now. Like, I'm not going to wait to where I might have other funds or anything. Because I think pre-ordering is really a system that came out since, because we were having so many games that were coming out at the same time. Like, Tomb Raider and Fallout 4 came out on the same day. So yeah, exactly. Just because there was so many, like, Black Ops 3 came out the week after that, or before, I don't remember. But, like, there were so many, and then there's Halo 5, there were so many games coming out. But if we know ahead.